Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What is going on? Welcome on in, everybody, to the Doghouse every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. It's the best place for a Browns and their upcoming opponent preview, and we're going to get into that tonight because we have got a humongous game to look forward to this weekend against a team that I know you're all going to get in here and want a badmouth, and I'm okay with it, but we got to be nice to our guests. That's the rule in the Doghouse. We got to be nice to our guest, even if we don't like their team, and we don't like their team. So we're going to have to talk about that a little bit. Hey, we're brought to you live here tonight on the Orange and Brown Streaming Network. If you like the hoodie, go to theobr.com, hit the shop button, grab yourself an OBR hoodie or a hat or any swag that they've got there. With you, as always, I'm your host, Michael Keefe, and the OBR Streaming Network is going crazy right now. Five nights a week of shows, including two shows here tonight. We got the Doghouse right now, and then I'll be back at 9 o'clock with Garage Beers Live. So make sure you're tuned in to all of that. Without any further ado, again, a massive win for the Cleveland Browns this last week. And I know we're all still buzzing from it over the Baltimore Ravens. And now I don't know that you could have set this up to be any bigger. The Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting ready to go 6-3 each side. And this game, at the end of this weekend, whoever wins this game could be sitting on top of the AFC North. So it is a huge, huge, huge game. And to talk about it, I've got a really great special guest. I'm really excited for this one. He hosts the Believe in Steelers podcast on the Believe Network over there with Ike Taylor. I'm going to bring him in right now. It is Mark Bergen. Mark, welcome into the Doghouse.
Mike, thank you for having me. And I'm curious, have the Browns contacted you yet to play offensive tackle for this game?
They called. They left a message. I haven't returned the call yet because I don't want to hurt TJ Watt. I wouldn't want to hurt him.
Mike, thank you for having me. And man, I wish I could stick around for that Garage Beer segment. That sounds phenomenal. Thank you for having me on your show tonight.
Hey, man, I really appreciate it. I will say this, not to name any names, but we've already done this once with a Steelers guest, but we couldn't do that again because that Steelers guest spent a little time talking to us about how the Steelers wide receivers matched up with Greedy Williams. And that was... That was a real interesting situation to listen to. So, no, Mark, we're really excited to have you in. And again, put the team aside, put the hatred between the two teams aside. Mark, you do an awesome job. I checked out some of your stuff on the Believe Network. You and Ike Taylor there just breaking down the Steelers, talking about the Steelers. You do a fantastic job. So I will say this. Go follow Mark on Twitter at MarkBergen_ and check out his show if you want to see how the Steelers and their fans and the team are getting ready for the Cleveland Browns this weekend. He's a great resource. Go check out everything Mark's got going on. Mark, man, let's get into this, because who would have thought at the beginning of this year that we'd have two teams here at 6-3, identical records, really weird ways that both teams have gotten to those records. This has not been a conventional way for either team to get to those records, but I don't know if we could have asked for much more for this matchup at this point of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'll say this, coming off interesting wins for both teams. So Steelers have had back-to-back weeks where they've run for season highs, rushing the ball, coming off 205 yards against the Packers. And then with the Browns too, and the comeback victory over the Ravens, I know Kevin Stefanski calling it a statement win in everything too, but a rematch of the Monday night game that we saw earlier this year in a game where it was like, wait a second, how have the Steelers won it? And we joke around on our show, the Believe in Steelers podcast, are we calling him Clutch Kenny Pickett, Cardiac Kenny Pickett, Fourth Quarter Kenny? Still trying to nail down a nickname, but when the
you're not allowed to have down, cardiac, you're not allowed to have cardiac.
Yeah, I know. That's, I know.
Off the table.
Understandable. But in all seriousness, for three quarters, he doesn't play very good. But then in the fourth quarter, when it counts, he just morphs into a different dude. Now, we've compared him to Eli Manning. It's not to say he's Eli with the two Super Bowl titles, but in the fourth quarter and clutch situations, time and time and time again, even if the Steelers are facing a deficit, he's able to come out on top. But really, the last 2 weeks with Pittsburgh, it's been the running game. They list co-starters now between Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. Warren coming off his first 100-yard game of his career. Najee almost had 100 against Green Bay. Both had a touchdown as well. But really, it's been since the Broderick Jones, the first-round pick out of Georgia, he's emerged in the starting lineup. He's replaced Chukwuma Okorafor at the right tackle position. In the last 2 weeks, from the first play of scrimmage for the Steelers offense, they've run right off tackle and gotten 5 yards. If they do the same against the Browns, I won't be mad about it. I also wouldn't be mad because they've put that on tape. Maybe try a play action. But he's brought an attitude, a demeanor. We call him a dancing polar bear, able to get to the second level. And it's establishing the ground game of, okay, if you then have to take that away, then maybe that opens up your passing game. Pat Freiermuth might be back. He's been hurt. Deontay Johnson's recently been back from a hamstring injury. It's been an offense that has not been great by any stretch of the means. Kenny Pickett does need to be better, but at least Pittsburgh is starting to develop a semblance of an offense, something that we really haven't seen during the Matt Canada tenure at the start of the 2021 season.
You brought up Pat Freiermuth. I think Mike Tomlin gave one of the great injury update speeches today where he was like, yeah, I hope that guy can go. And well, man, that guy might practice with us. And man, he's really trying to get back. And like nothing of substance whatsoever.
Well, you have to know how to interpret it, Mike. You have to know how to interpret it. It does sound like Freiermuth's going to give it a go. Minkah Fitzpatrick, we'll see throughout the week. That, I think, is more 50-50. If you understand the Tomlinisms, it sounds like Freiermuth is going to play in this one on Sunday.
Yeah, and listen, I want to start by, you know, I think we have to start with the elephant in the room here as far as just kind of looking at how these teams have gotten to where they've gotten. And again, like I said, it's been unconventional. I think outside of Pittsburgh, for the majority of people outside of Pittsburgh, I know here in Cleveland, and we're biased to all get out, but we're trying to figure out what how many souls had to get sold to the devil for the Pittsburgh Steelers to be 6-3 on this season. Because when you look numbers wise, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. And actually, the funny thing is, numbers wise, like we do this fourth down or fourth quarter thing with Kenny. It hasn't been quite like it was last year with Kenny, fourth quarter guy. But like 28th in yards per game, near the bottom of the league in offensive touchdowns. The big news every week is that they still haven't out-yardaged a team in a game. They get beat out in yards every single week. I don't think a team has ever won as many games as the Steelers have without gaining more yards than an opponent one time. The passing offense is 29th in the league. The rushing offense coming around, like you said, 20th in the league. 26th in scoring. Just everything about the offense, metrics-wise, is... hey, this is not a very good offense. And this is not a team that scores a lot of points. They're pretty decent. Like the top metric is that they're 19th in the red zone in the league. We're all just trying to figure out offensively, because defense, I think, gives a big part of this answer. And frankly, their ability to generate turnovers is outrageous. But offensively, like how are they staying afloat?
So you just answered your own question, Mike. And the two stats I'll point to is you lead the league in takeaways defensively with 18. Mm-hmm. You're tied for the league and you're top of the league, tied for top league in turnover margin at plus 10.
Wild.
Kenny Pickett hasn't been great, but he has the longest active streak right now without throwing an interception. And you're coming off a game where you won time of possession for only the second time of this year. So you don't get killed in time of possession. You don't turn the ball over. And you create takeaways with a bend but don't break defense. That's been the recipe. In terms of getting into the playoffs, okay, sure, yeah. I mean, if the season ended today, they'd have the first wild card slot, great. Having playoff success, that's another conversation with this Pittsburgh group. I think Mike Tomlin's on his way to another winning season in year 17. It's been a remarkable run. But in terms of getting that first playoff win since the 2016 season, in terms of the style of play, in terms of you've got to be able to win different styles of play come playoff time, that's where I think there's a limit with this current Steelers team, unless you see massive improvements with this offense.
And let's talk about, you know, we've talked a little bit with other Steelers folks about the impression of Kenny Pickett. And I can tell by the way you talk about him, the clutch gene, you like that part of his game. But talk about your overall feelings on Kenny Pickett, because I get a minor sense when I talk to people that I know from the Steelers of, I hesitate to use the word panic. It's not panic, but it's like a panic-induced hope. It's a, if this guy doesn't work out, you guys only had to trust me here in Cleveland. We know what it's like to be in that Brown or in that quarterback, that middle ground or not having a good quarterback and having a good roster and desperately searching for a quarterback thing. It sounds to me a little bit like Kenny Pickett gets a little hyped. Like, yeah, this is the guy. This is totally the guy. Cause if he's not the guy, then what are we're not going back to Mason Rudolph and Mitch Trubisky and that bunch. So what's your honest opinion on what you've seen from him through his first 2 years?
I'm not really panicking at all for this reason. You let his rookie deal play out. He's in year two and you evaluate, okay, do we want to pick up the fifth year option as a first round pick? If you do, great. If not, great. And if you do pick up his fifth year option beyond that year, would you want to franchise tag him? So the Steelers have time. You mentioned Mitch Trubisky, who's had 50-plus career starts. We know what he can do at the quarterback position. And Kenny Pickett deserves that same luxury because, and I pointed this out on my show today, Mike, a lot of people are upset with Kenny Pickett's play. You could point to the play calling and the predictability of the offense under Matt Canada. At some point, Mike Tomlin is culpable on part of that too. You could point to in previous seasons, they didn't have the personnel. This was the season where the sum was supposed to equal its parts. But with Kenny Pickett, it's like the question I have is this, and the answer is that there isn't an answer. Who are the Steelers supposed to bring in post Ben Roethlisberger that you could point to that would be a tangible upgrade over Kenny Pickett on a rookie contract? Because I get it in my mentions of all these crazy claims. I mean, before the deadline, should Pittsburgh trade for Kirk Cousins before he got hurt? And it's like, sweet, so we'll pay the remaining balance on a $35 million contract for marginal better play. Like, what are we talking about in terms of getting this team back in contention to win a Super Bowl? So if a good young rookie quarterback, and you know this, is worth his salt, he'll quickly outperform his rookie contract. It hasn't been what you'd have hoped with the 20th overall pick, but I look in the division, what Deshaun Watson has done in the past with Houston with his on-field performance, what Joe Burrow has done and what Lamar Jackson has done. The AFC is a gauntlet. The Texans might have another one with Stroud, Mahomes. I could go through the whole list. That was the hope with Kenny Pickett. But the question I always go back to is post Ben Roethlisberger, what the heck were the Steelers supposed to do in that scenario, if not for Pickett? Point me to an option where it would be a tangible upgrade given salary cap constraints, drafting position. This is where Mike Tomlin's a victim of his own success. He's in year 17, Mike. I want you to think about this for a second. The highest pick he's had during his tenure in Pittsburgh was the 10th pick, and they traded up to get Devin Bush back in 2019. The 10th pick is the highest pick he's had. So you're not going to bottom out and get Caleb Williams or Drake
right.
May or
that,
another
well, that's,
stud quarterback. So yeah. That's where I land with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I think the ultimate thing as far as all the crazy, because we were doing it too here, especially we didn't know when Deshaun Watson was going to play. And so people were Kirk Cousins and should they go get, bring back Josh Dobbs and get Jacoby Brissett and all that stuff. They were doing it here. They were calling for it here. Can we talk about Dobbs for just a second, Mike? I would take Kirk Cousins over Kenny Pickett in a pretty quick
fashion. But for $35 million versus a rookie deal.
The cap constraints are, you know, but.
And we could talk about Dobbs too, because Cleveland brought him back. He was on Pittsburgh. Arizona, Tennessee, several other teams have had Dobbs, and this isn't an anti-Josh Dobbs segment. It's not.
No.
But you can always say that the grass is greener. Point me to a quarterback that is tangibly better than Kenny Pickett that the Steelers could have gotten. That answer doesn't exist. It doesn't.
Well, and it's tough. And that's if I was a Steelers fan, if my concern with Kenny Pickett would be if he does not develop, we consistently put out a good roster. So the bottoming out thing is just not, I would love to say as a Browns fan, the Steelers are going to bottom out and lose two games next year. I just like until it happens, Like this was the year I was like, all right, the winning season year is over, because I just looked at them. I was like, that this team isn't going to win a ton of games. And here they are, 6-3, and they're going to have another winning season. And it just, until it happens, I'm not going to believe that it's not going to happen. But if he doesn't pan out, we're not going to be bottomed out. We're not going to be number one, number two draft pick. And it's going to be hard for us to find the replacement. That'd be my concern. But like you said, there's time for that, obviously, with him just in his second season. But yeah, I think it's interesting because there's so many, the opinions are so scattered across the board on Kenny Pickett and what he can become.
Yeah, I go back to, it's like, what were you supposed to do in that scenario? Like, in all seriousness, because you look at the quarterbacks that hit the free agent market, maybe above average is the best that you're going to get on a year-to-year basis. So, like, let's just be real about that. And you have the luxury of the fact that he's played at Acrisure, formerly Heinz Field, where he's got that familiarity. He had a lot of game experience in college coming into the league. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And then, I mean, if the big question, too, if you're looking at this big picture, is they've brought Matt Canada down from the booth onto the sidelines, Pittsburgh Steelers offensive coordinator. And the offense has been better this last 2 weeks. But given what we've seen and the predictability, and I could point to all these stats where the Steelers offense hasn't been very good, what he would need be able to do to keep his job, because his contract is up by the end of the season. You know, we look at Ken Dorsey, just got fired by the Bills today. Yep. Byron Leftwich, a former Steelers quarterback, has experience as an offensive coordinator with a Super Bowl winning team in Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's out there. You could go get him. They'll try to bring someone else in if Matt Canada doesn't keep his job. And that remains to be seen. It's like what he would need be able to do is the offense would need to get way better. And you got to go win a playoff game, period.
Let's go over to the other side of the ball, Mark, and let's talk about the defense, because I find the defense for the Steelers to be fascinating. I associate the Steelers with just really good, rock solid defense, and some of their numbers pan that out. This is a Steelers team that gives up a ton of yards. They gave up a ton of yards. They let you move the ball up and down the field. They're letting teams consistently move the ball up and down the field, and yet they're one of the best scoring defenses in football. They let you move the ball all you want, but they don't let you score very much. And again, we talked about the red zone defense is outrageous. I think it's one of the top in the league, and they turn you over like crazy. So is there anything that worries you about the Steelers defense, the way that they're playing? Are they playing with fire a little bit in as much as they're letting teams move the ball?
A little bit, but let me give you glass half full, glass half empty. I'll start with glass half full. Cam Hayward's back in this lineup now, to where
great
he was out for. Yeah, it's great for the Browns, right?
Right. Yeah, great.
He missed significant time with a groin injury. Had an operation week one. He goes down, and he's now two games back. So, you know, one of your best defensive linemen, and he gets his notoriety in Pittsburgh. But he's a name where I think he's probably known across the AFC North, but really not the NFL overall. So he's back. He should help shore up the front seven. Where I have concern for Pittsburgh is your two inside linebackers that you bring in, Quan Alexander and Cole Holcomb, both have season-ending injuries now. So Landon Roberts, who was in a three linebacker rotation because the Steelers traditionally run a 3-4 defense, now has to take on more of the responsibility. Mark Robinson will get into the mix. Michael Walker will get into the mix, someone that they're elevating off the practice squad. And this was a defense where 2 years ago, the Steelers defense led the NFL on sacks, but ranked dead last in rushing yards allowed. I don't know if I've ever seen that dichotomy before. It was better last season when you bring in Brian Flores as a linebackers coach and a defensive assistant. He's now the DC over for the Minnesota Vikings, so he's no longer on the Steelers coaching staff. But the Steelers said, hey, Devin Bush, Miles Jack, they're not getting it done. We're going to bring inside linebackers to do the job. The issue is, again, Cole Holcomb and Quan Alexander are both injured now with season-ending injuries. How you adapt to that after the trade deadline, too, is a huge question mark that I have, because we know, regardless of who's lined up for the Browns, I know Chubb's not healthy, but they have a very good offensive line. Callahan, their offensive line coach, is very well respected throughout the league. So the Browns run the ball, Ravens run the ball. Joe Mixon's not bad. And the reason why I bring up the AFC North teams are those are the teams that you're going to have to play twice a year. And it's the physicality, it's the bully ball of the AFC North. That's what we've seen for the last, 20, 30 years. So that's the concern that I have, is the depth at the inside linebacker position that you had even just 2 weeks ago. Two key contributors, two key starters now out with season-ending injuries. That's where I'd try to attack the Browns, the Steelers, if I was the Browns offense, is that interior. Hey, can you hold up front with young players trying to establish themselves, specifically at the inside linebacking position, just because Roberts has some game experience, but those other two guys, Walker and Robinson, they just don't have as much game experience to this point. That's a huge question mark I have, not just going into this game, but beyond the 2023 season throughout this for the Steelers defense.
All right, let's have a fun conversation here for a minute, because we're talking about the Steelers defense. We could talk a little bit about the Browns defense too, because the Steelers rankings don't look as gaudy as the Browns rankings, but the Steelers defense has been good, especially when you're talking about how little they've allowed teams to score. But let's go into my favorite debate that happens. I'll give you my opinion on it afterwards, but let's go into my favorite debate that happens online. And it seems to happen consistently amongst Browns and Steelers fans. And it doesn't matter whether the Steelers are playing the Packers or the Little Sisters of the Poor. Doesn't matter who the Browns are playing. This debate rages on over and over and over again. And Mark, I want to have it with you. I want to have this debate with you. The debate rages on. TJ Watt versus Myles Garrett.
Can I just say this? This is like the Browns Steelers version of the MJ LeBron debate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible, because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Yeah, I mean, but, it's fair.
Like that's how I feel about it. Let me say this. I would say that like Garrett probably has better natural ability. I also think Watt has been the beneficiary of playing with Cam Hayward and playing opposite. Right now, it's Alex Highsmith. Bud Dupree had two good years when he was trying to get the bag as well, where if he garners a lot of attention, someone else eats. I don't know if Myles Garrett has had that luxury in Cleveland. The numbers and the statistics and the production have been better than Watt, but I'd probably say Garrett has better natural ability in terms of like, if you were building your dream defensive end, they're both terrific players. I mean, in all seriousness, it's like, and then you could get into the head-to-head matchups where it's like, well, the Steelers typically are better than the Browns in the head-to-heads too. So it's just like, look, like it's one of those things where it's like the MJ LeBron debate. You're going to have both people in their camps. And it's like, for me, it's like, just recognize both of their greatness. And that's just kind of how I land about that. I know it's not flashy at all, Mike, but I'd love to hear what you think about the whole thing.
No, you know, I love it. I was waiting to see if you were going to give some big, like firm statement about like Myles Garrett sucks, TJ Watt. No, but I'm with you. I love the debate because I hate the debate. I love the debate. I love, you brought up the point that I bring up a lot in, if you want to give Myles a little nudge in the debate, it's, TJ Watt's played with a lot of guys. Like, look at the amount of TJ Watt fumbles TJ Watt has recovered and returned for touchdowns and stuff. Why? Because Cam Hayward has crushed a quarterback and forced a fumble, and TJ Watt's right there to pick up the ball. Having said that, anybody that says there's this contingent, I know it's a Browns thing, but anybody that says that these aren't two of the top three defensive ends in all of football,
morons.
It's crazy to me.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me. You can make all the excuses you want for why TJ Watt, you don't like him and he plays for the Steelers and he's got better players around him and all that stuff. And you can, talk about PFF grades and all that, all you want. The fact of the matter is these are two of the top three. These are two of the top three defensive ends in all of football. And you can maybe throw Nick Bosa into the conversation out there in San Francisco. But other than that, I mean, this is the elite
maybe
of the elite.
Parsons, let me piggyback off that too, Mike. In the season, your listeners will love this. In the season where Watt tied the single season sack record with Michael Strahan, so he obviously leads the NFL in sacks. He also led the NFL in tackles for loss that season. And he played in only 15 of the 17 possible games. And oh, by the way, in four of the games, he played 50% or fewer of the team's defensive snaps.
Here it comes.
So last year, too, it's like, well, why are we talking about 2 years ago? He was hurt. Look at what the Steelers do, not just defensively, but as an entire team when he plays versus when he doesn't play. Yeah. He's the Jenga piece. So if you don't have him on the field, he's a special, special player. I also think there's something to this and why the Browns haven't done this. I don't know, but let's have a deeper conversation about this for just a second. TJ Watt consistently lines up against an opposing team's right tackle. Why? Because most quarterbacks are right-handed. He can get right in the face of an opposing quarterback. I also think there's something to the fact that we always talk about the left tackle and the blind side of protecting quarterbacks. And I understand that maybe it's easier to force a fumble if the quarterback doesn't know that you're coming, but is there a talent discrepancy between left tackles in the NFL? When you're drafting a first round tackle, you hope it's a left tackle and not a right tackle, where maybe there's growing importance to the right tackle position. And, you know, this segment's not going to lead SportsCenter, but in terms of how football is actually played, these are things that I think about when I watch football. And it's no mistake that the Steelers line Watt over opposing teams' right tackles again, because most quarterbacks are right-handed in this league. And I honestly think that there's an argument to be made where your best offensive lineman's probably either your center or your left tackle. At least your smartest is going to be your center.
Then
your left tackle. So I think there's something to that. I think it's interesting. The Browns usually, because Garrett's usually lined up over the left tackles, if I'm not wrong.
I do want to go back real quick to the Garrett Watt argument, because our friend Browns fan 122907 in the comments said, Mark, you made good points, but his argument would be that Miles is better. So shout out to that. That's flawless reasoning there.
Browns it's fan. The MJ LeBron debate. You're going to be in one camp or the other. I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's anything either of us could say that would change anyone's opinions. I think there's arguments to be made for both. I genuinely do.
I think you made a great point. I think it's interesting. I think, you know, that has always been interesting to me that Pittsburgh lines up Watt usually over the right tackle. Mm-hmm. And usually that isn't your, like, I look at the right side of the line. It's what we have in Cleveland a lot of the time. The right side of our line is the Maulers in the run game.
Conklin.
And DeJuan Jones. And now, if you know, hopefully he's back. But if he's not back, it's James Hudson. And that James Hudson might not be a very good pass defender, and that's going to be a problem against TJ Watt. But, man, he can block in the run game. And Wyatt Teller's over there at right guard, right? And those guys are maulers in the run game.
Wyatt Teller's a nasty, nasty dude. And
yeah.
They had him in the playoff game a few years back against Tyrann Mathieu. And it's just like, I would not want to have to go up against Wyatt Teller. His physicality is something else. And again, I mentioned him earlier. Bill Callahan, the offensive line coach, that's your identity for Cleveland. And when Chubb was healthy, okay, but Jerome Ford has done a nice job filling the void. You bring Kareem Hunt back, and it's just like you fill in Ford instead of Chubb. And it's like, look, I know no one's Chubb, but that's your identity. In Callahan, there's a reason why he is very, very well respected. And Mike Tomlin even brought it up during his media availability today. That's a name where it's like, the better that the Browns can run the ball, the better that they're able to set things up in the passing game with Deshaun Watson. It's not flashy, but like now that we're into November, December, January football, it's different than the high flying fantasy that we see in September and October. It's a different style of football.
That's right. So listen, we've talked about kind of how the Steelers have gotten here. And I said at the beginning, both teams have taken non-traditional routes. The Browns have in the last game, and people are still not happy about a certain player for the Pittsburgh Steelers taking out Nick Chubb. The Browns have lost their quarterback for several games and had to go with PJ Walker and DTR at times. And yet somehow the Browns managed to work their way through that whole situation, largely behind one of the best defenses in football. And they found their way to 6-3. Like I think if you would have told me before the season, Nick Chubb's going down week two, then we're going to have this phantom shoulder injury to Deshaun Watson. And we're not going to, and I don't mean that as if it wasn't real. It just means there was no, like, we didn't know what it was. Every week we were hearing, yeah, oh, he might be ready this week. He might
and
not
he's
be
medically
ready
cleared. And then he doesn't want to go. And it's just like,
yeah, well, and he was hurt. And he was trying to go, and then he came out and played like five plays against the Colts, and he couldn't go anymore. And we just, it's not a phantom thing in that it wasn't real and it didn't exist. It's a phantom thing in that we had no idea what to expect. If you would have told me we would have lost our left tackle and our right tackle, two right tackles, if you would have told me all that stuff coming into this season, I'd be like, oh, cool, the Browns are going to have one win going into that Pittsburgh game. And this season is going to suck real bad, but they've managed to find their way through it. And they've grown in crazy ways, and it all culminated this last week against the Baltimore Ravens. You talked about bully ball in the AFC North. Mark, as a Browns fan, I'm used to watching teams bully ball the Browns. And maybe that narrative is starting to get a little bit old because the Browns have been more competitive over the last 5 years. But kind of used to teams bully balling the Cleveland Browns. And what the Browns did to the Ravens this last week, they bully balled the Ravens.
Not with the defense either. I mean, you're finally putting it together with the amount of first rounders on that defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's where bringing over, I mentioned the identity with the offensive line, Jim Schwartz instead of Joe Woods. So it's like, I look at, okay, like you have similar personnel and it's like, all right, let's revamp who the defensive tackles are to help out Myles Garrett, because Myles Garrett's going to be neutralized if you don't get a push up front at all, and you can't establish the A and B gaps at the line of scrimmage with your tackles.
Welcome to last year.
Tackles. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So the difference is you revamp that, you bring in Jim Schwartz, and it's like, there you go. That's why your defense has had success. The Browns have a very, very good defense this season. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, they've been awesome, and they've worked themselves into this. Again, last game they beat the Ravens, and it really felt like a turning point. And I'll tell you from our perspective, Mark, and then maybe you can give us the Steelers fan perspective on this upcoming game against each other. But I'll tell you from a lot of Browns fans perspective, this game is the most meaningful regular season football game I can remember in a long time in Cleveland. It's a division opponent. It's Pittsburgh. It's coming off a hard-fought, emotional win over Baltimore, in which I think a lot of fans, whether they want to admit it or not, thought that we were coming out of Baltimore at 5-4 and not 6-3, especially the way Baltimore was playing. And now there's a chance here in Cleveland, there's a chance to take down Pittsburgh, go to 7-3 on the year. You're getting healthier. Deshaun Watson is looking better and better. And it's like, oh, if the Browns get this game against Pittsburgh, like it's on, like this is the we are contenders. Like this is the stamping point, right? And that's the feeling here. It's a huge feeling for this game in this moment. I don't know, you know, Pittsburgh's had a different route to where they are this season, and it's been filled with a lot of playoff runs and a lot of division titles and some Super Bowls and all that kind of stuff. What are they saying about this game in Pittsburgh?
You know, if you could get two, it's really hard in the division. I look at it at quarters. I try not to take too much from any one individual game, but I look at the season in quarters, and there's Kenny Pickett's under fire this week. And it's like your team's 6-3, you're in a playoff position. It could be much, much worse. There's other teams that would kill to be in the spot that you're in right now. But to take down Cleveland would be huge, because you pretty much stole a game earlier this year. In fact, I'll just say it. Steelers should not have won that Monday night matchup earlier in this season. Alex Highsmith went off because of the attention Watt garners. He gets an interception, strip sack, fumble that Watt picks up and runs for a touchdown. So you're getting two defensive touchdowns, and you barely scrape by because the offense hasn't been very good. probably not going to get two touchdowns in this game from your defense. So you've got to be able to find a way. I think there's a reason why Cleveland at home is a 3.5-4 point favorite in this one. It's a big game, but I look at the season in quarters and the division matchups, though, it's really, really tough to win both of those games, regardless of how good or bad a team is. I wouldn't put too much on this because, like, I'm looking at it from the standpoint for Pittsburgh, assuming they can continue on the trajectory that they're on right now. Sweet, they get into the playoffs. It used to be in Pittsburgh, okay, we're going to go win a Lombardi. Let's go get the seventh trophy. I just want to see a playoff win. It's been a long time. I'm a Tomlin fan. I'm in his camp. But it's been since the 2016 season that the Steelers have won a playoff game. So that's kind of my litmus test for this season. It's not to look beyond this game. It's very important. But that's how I'm looking at it and everything. And then from the Browns standpoint too, which Deshaun Watson's going to show up? Are you going to get 14 of 14 like you saw in the second half? And it's like, whoa, this is the guy that we paid a fortune for and gave him the largest guaranteed contract. Are we going to see the guy who was 6 for 20 in the first half? And it's like, it's so funny because if we would have been having the same conversation after that first half in Baltimore, you'd have been, oh, well, the sky is falling. And that's why you have to take it beyond just one game. It's a big one. It's a big one for me, Mike, because it's the division. It's because it's the division and the AFC North. Like, there's a reason it's a gauntlet. It might be the best division in the league. I'll say this, though, too, with this caveat. I think each team in the division has serious, serious flaws that might prevent their ability to actually win in the playoffs, because I'm at the standpoint right now where it's like, I think Pittsburgh can get in the playoffs, but once they're there, it really probably is more incumbent upon what's their matchup, because the offense isn't where it needs to be right now.
Fair. Yeah. And I totally understand. And listen, if the Browns didn't win this game, which I don't want to talk about, but if they didn't win this game, is it the end of the season? No, but I think what a lot of Browns fans are doing is looking at the rest of the schedule, because the Browns have been through the gauntlet part of the schedule. This would classify, just because, and even if you don't think the Steelers are, even if you don't think they're as good as their record says they are, this is still part of that gauntlet of that first part of the season. And then you're looking at the Browns schedule going, okay, things have loosened up a little bit here. And we've got the Bears coming, and we got the Rams, and we got, you know, some of these teams that should be teams that the Browns can handle. So if you can come out with your seventh win in this one and you look at the rest of that schedule, you're going, oh, okay, we're feeling pretty darn good about what this can look like. And now we're talking about, can you get to a point where you're not just playing in the playoffs, but can you get to a point where you're hosting a playoff game? I think that's why Cleveland fans are so amped up for this game.
Mike, can I ask you a question about what's the sentiment, not just this season, but beyond this season, with Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Tomlin too, so that's a good jump off point. I don't know how you could want the Browns to do anything but extend Kevin Stefanski. I think the majority of the sentiment is that. I think he's an imperfect coach. I think sometimes the play calling can be a little too out there sometimes. Like, sometimes you got to just take some of the easy stuff and go with it. And Kevin can get a little too cute sometimes. But having said that, especially with what he's done in the situation this year, where you didn't have Deshaun Watson and you've lost Nick Chubb, and offensively you've still been okay. You managed to win games with PJ Walker against the San Francisco 49ers. And that wasn't an offensive display by any stretch, but you managed to win games. I think the majority of Browns fans are in the boat of Kevin could get better at things, but he's really good. And he's a very good head coach. And he's clearly he's got the buy-in from his players. That was always kind of a question with Kevin Stefanski. Is he's the kind of coach that inspires the buy-in from his players? I think that's never been more evident than it is this year, because those players are completely bought in. And so I think the majority say, keep him. You certainly have the contingent of fans that it's kind of what we were talking about before, the grass is greener, right? They think if you replace Kevin Stefanski with, I don't know who, that they'll be able to get more out of players. I just don't. For me, I'm team Kevin Stefanski all day, every day. I think he's a phenomenal head coach, and I think he's still getting better. He's a relatively young coach in the league. So we see a comment here. Oh, right here from Mick the Dog that says, Kevin Stefanski, way, way, way too predictable play caller at times, drives me crazy. I just don't know who could be better. So for me, I'm all about Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, I kind of look at it from the standpoint of since the Browns came back into existence in the 99 season, it's just been a rinse and repeat of let's cycle through GM, head coach, and quarterbacks. And I mean, gosh, we could probably talk till sunup of what happened during Baker Mayfield's tenure in Cleveland and everything too. But just to stop that cycle, and this is way easier said than done with NFL success and franchises. But I guess I suppose I'm of the opinion where it's like if you have continuity with ownership, general manager, head coach, and quarterback, those four positions, you can put your franchise in a position to succeed. And yes, while I think there are better coaches than Kevin Stefanski, at least you have an adult in the room, really, since both he and Andrew Berry came on board in Cleveland. It's like, are you going to win a Super Bowl? I don't know, but they gave Kansas City as good a run as any team has when the Chiefs were doing their thing a few seasons back. And to be right there, that's why you go and swing for the fences and you bring in Deshaun Watson, because you can't hit a home run if you don't swing for the fences. So at least with Stefanski, like, I get it. And maybe he's more valuable to Cleveland than he would be another pro franchise. But I just see that cycle. I see that cycle that the Browns went through. I mean, just look back at Mayfield's run of Hugh Jackson, then the interim Williams, and then Freddie Kitchens. And then it's just like young quarterback development. How's a young quarterback supposed to develop if you're just trying to treat a flesh wound with a Band-Aid? It doesn't make any sense, because when young quarterbacks struggle, I think the question shouldn't be, well, it's like, oh, this guy just sucks. Okay, who's his personnel around him? Offensive line play doesn't get talked nearly about enough because it's not flashy. But more importantly than any of those things, as well as coaching.
Yeah.
Coaching is going to be the most important thing, because there's only going to be a handful of John Elway, Peyton Manning, Joe Burrow types in this league, period. There's only going to be a handful.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you're 100% right. And we've been through the carousel. And that's, I saw a comment that came through before that said Stefanski's great. AB, the GM, even better. You mentioned a couple other parts of the organization that could be called into question. But from a coach and a general manager standpoint, I'm happy with what the Browns have. You guys deal with it too over there. Now, I'm going to hope it's settled down a little, because I said a million times over, if for some reason the Browns didn't get it right and Kevin Stefanski was removed from his position, and you got all these Steelers fans that it just seems like it's the loud ones on Twitter that are like, fire Mike Tomlin, and they don't win enough with, they're not winning playoff games, and they don't win the big game with Mike Tomlin. I've said a million times, if for some reason Stefanski wasn't here and the Steelers fired Mike Tomlin, he could just 2-hour drive right up the road. There's a house fresh somewhere for him to buy, and he could sign a contract for as long as he wants it in Cleveland.
Roll out the red carpet.
I don't know what's going on with the people in Pittsburgh, but like, Mike Tomlin is an elite level head coach in the NFL.
And it's like, could he at least have a losing season first before you want to just run him out of town? You know, there's only one team that wins the Super Bowl every year. Yeah, I'd like to have better playoff success during his run. He's won a Super Bowl. He's brought you to two. I understand that's more than a decade ago. We talked to John McClain. He wrote for the Houston Chronicle. He's covered the NFL for almost 50 years. And we talked to John. We were asking, what's Mike Tomlin's future? And this was around the time where there were rumblings that Sean McVay might retire and become a commentator and make an exorbitant amount from being a commentator for Amazon. And I think Mike Tomlin could very well do the same if he ever decides to hang it up and say, hey, I want to be an analyst or be in the booth or be a commentator. But Mike Tomlin, during his tenure, again, no losing seasons, he can be in Pittsburgh as long as he wants to be, because he has the buy-in from ownership and his GM. And it's like, yeah, I understand from a style of play standpoint, he does need to adapt into the 21st century and beyond, having a mobile quarterback playing 11-on-11 football, being able to win different styles of play, because there's times with the Steelers, it's like they're trying to win with a model that worked in, say, 2003, 2004, 2005. But when John McClain, who's covered the NFL for 50 years, says if the Steelers ever decided to get rid of Tomlin, one of the other 31 franchises would hire him on the same day by sundown, take that to heart, because this is a guy who's covered the league for almost 50 years. So when he says that, it resonates with me. Pittsburgh's very lucky to have Mike Tomlin. We'd love to see him get another Lombardi before he hangs it up. I think he still has gas left in the tank, whether it's 5, 10, 15 years. I don't know. But if Pittsburgh wants to run him out of town, again, it's the same argument I'll make with Kenny Pickett. Who are you hiring? Who are you bringing
in? Oh, for
says,
sure.
Oh, that's going to be the next generation. And it's not how the Rooneys conduct business, because you had Chuck Knoll and you had Bill Cowher before Mike Tomlin. You have Mike
Tomlin. And that's it.
What a great run you could have. I'm talking to a Browns fan base right now where it's just like, we could list off 4 or 5 times as many coaches as we've had during that same run. So
we're praying that you guys do it. We're praying that you do it. I pray. Look, at Hugh Jackson's available for you guys if you want him. I pray that you guys fire Mike Tomlin and then you get a simple taste of what the coaching carousel is like, because it's impossible.
Thank you. No,
it's impossible. It's impossible. All right. Hey, Mark, we got a few minutes left. Let's really get into this matchup here for the next few minutes, and then we'll get into like maybe a key of the game and a prediction for this one. Mm-hmm. So let's start Steelers defense, Browns offense. Again, on the offensive side of the ball for the Browns, I don't think you can say you're going to get 14 for 14 Deshaun Watson, because you can't say that you're going to get a perfect outing from a quarterback, and he was really damn near perfect that second half of that game. I also would be very surprised if we saw 6 for 20 Deshaun Watson again, because once he really settled in, everything looked a little more comfortable. His throws looked much better, and it looked like he just loosened up as that game went along. So Deshaun Watson coming in probably looking better than he did specifically in week 2, where he was really struggling to find himself in that game. And then obviously Nick Chubb going out, I think that really took the wind out of the sails of the Cleveland Browns. And I think it was very emotional for them that night. And I don't think they knew how to respond to that. And you got the Steelers defense. I think the thing you have to watch in this matchup, you brought up a great thing with middle linebackers and David Njoku. I think that's a matchup area you got to watch, because David Njoku's been a beast, especially lately. But I think you got to look at those guys on the outside of the defensive line, the ends on the line versus the tackles. And that is that's the point where the Browns have got to get this game right.
Yeah, I want to save that for the key matchup, because you're going to have to block, chip, keep tight ends in, running backs in to help off the edge. So I want to save that, because that's really my key point. But what I'm curious about is, like, in the first matchup, Joey Porter Jr., the Steelers' second-round pick, 32 overall out of Penn State, he wasn't starting for Pittsburgh the last time these two teams played. And he was the guy that Pittsburgh threw out against DeAndre Hopkins and limited D-Hop a few weeks back. So, okay, do you want to put JPJ to neutralize Amari Cooper on the outside? And then how you're going to attack Patrick Peterson, who's on the back half of his career, maybe the last few years of his career. He signed a 2-year deal with Pittsburgh. I'd imagine he might have a season or two left. Levi Wallace has been up and down too. So how the Browns attack the Steelers cornerbacks, that's an area that has not been great for the Steelers defensively, and they have some injuries. So, okay, if Minka Fitzpatrick, your best defensive back, isn't going to play, and they're saying he's 50-50, it could go either way. Right now, if the game were played like, say, Thursday, I wouldn't expect him to be able to go. That's an area where the Browns need to take advantage, whether it's Cooper or another receiver. So that's kind of how I look at that from attacking this Steelers defense. But you've got to keep Watson clean. You got to keep him upright, because that pass rush is going to get after you, because the Steelers can get home with 4. And the thing that they do have is, it's not just Watt and Highsmith. Marcus Golden, the veteran player who's had double-digit sacks 3 times in his career, has made the most out of his limited opportunities, along with Nick Herbig as well, where it's not the number of snaps, but the number of snaps that they get, they contribute. So that's an area of depth with Pittsburgh is, yeah, Watt and Highsmith get all the headlines, but they have depth behind both of those players too. That's an advantage that the Steelers need to take advantage of, given the injuries along the Browns offensive line.
Mark, one thing that I find so fascinating about doing this show every week is I think almost every single week, the person I talk to in talking about how their team is going to match up with the Cleveland Browns mentions their best cornerback neutralizing Amari Cooper. And it hasn't happened.
He's missed a consistency.
It doesn't happen. There is no neutralizing this dude. I love having this guy. I don't know that I love having anybody on my team more than Amari Cooper with Nick Chubb out. Because this dude just quietly goes about his business. Everybody talks about him as if he's not an upper-tier wide receiver in the NFL. And then every week he goes out there and shows you that he's better than anybody, that he is so much better than anybody gives him credit for. And again, I hear it every week. Well, if they just put their best corner on him, you neutralize him, he's out. I'm like, that is not going to work.
Try to is what I should have said, because Mike, you're exactly right. His route running ability, he's a receiver we don't talk about. And it's the consistency year after year after year after year.
Wild.
Where like he's not Tyreek Hill, okay, but he's up there, I'd say, what, maybe top 10, a top 10 receiver. It's like
he shows
he's
himself
the type
to be
of player
year.
You'd love to have on your team. And it's funny too, Mike, I talked to some Browns folks too. You know, that sentiment you have about Amari Cooper, I never got that feeling with Browns fans when you guys had OBJ. Never had the same feeling of what it is that we're talking about right now.
We really tried to talk ourselves into it. Oh, man, I really tried to talk myself into it. I really did. I really did. No offense to OBJ, but when your dad makes a video about how you got to leave, then it just... I also think the running game is huge for the Browns. I mean, I think if the best way to kind of neutralize a pass rush is to make them fear the run game a little bit and to make TJ Watt have to hesitate a little bit on a move because he's concerned about a play action that might be headed his way. And that gives Deshaun Watson a little extra time to throw the ball. I think that is a huge part of this game. The Browns have to do what they did last week against Baltimore, a really good run defense. That offensive line has to bully ball in the run game, and Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt and Deshaun Watson have to use their legs in this game. I think that's imperative, or else if you let those guys just tee off and not worry about the run game, it's problematic.
We don't talk about time of possession nearly enough, but if you talk to any player who's played defense in the NFL and you ask, what's it like to have an offense that can sustain drives, can stay on the field, you've got a good running back that you know that's going to consistently move the chains, not fumble and put up points on the board, to where you're sitting on the sidelines drinking Gatorade, getting your legs back, maybe getting some oxygen, chilling to where, oh, okay, now we got to go back on the field. We're ready. We're ready.
That's
we don't
right.
talk about time of possession enough. It doesn't always tell the story of every single game, but that compiles as a season gets later and later and later into the season. And it's a very important facet of football where, again, it's not flashy, but it can win you a lot of ball games in this league.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, it's the Pittsburgh offense, the Browns defense. Again, the Browns defense has been one of the league's best, but they, you know, it's not an every week thing, right? It's hard to be dominant week in and week out, and they're good, and they have started lately. If they're not going to dominate an entire game, they've started lately making big plays at big moments. You saw it in the game against Baltimore, whether it was the Ravens having the ball in field goal range and Myles Garrett coming up with two sacks to basically knock him out of field goal range, or obviously the big play on Greg Newsom's first career interception going for a pick six to what should have tied the game up. But instead, after the missed extra point, it still got the Browns to a position where the field goal wins the game, and that's ultimately what happened. They've become, as this season has gone on, a little bit more opportunistic, and that turnover margin for the Browns was not very good to start the year. And again, what do you expect when we're talking about, no offense to P.J. Walker, but we're talking about P.J. Walker and you don't have Nick Chubb and you're turning the ball over a lot. That turnover margin's getting better and better for the Cleveland Browns. On the other side, though, that's what the defense is best at. So for me, a big part of this game for the Cleveland Browns defensively is you got to turn this. You know, you talked about Kenny Pickett not having the longest interception list streak in the NFL right now. That has to change. That you got to get after Kenny Pickett, and you got to have faith. Hopefully our guys get healthy in Cleveland and Denzel Ward's feeling okay and Juan Thornhill's feeling okay. Because if they are, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup for Kenny Pickett to go up against that defensive backfield.
Yeah, you got to know where 21 is on the field with Ward and then Garrett. I mean, he's going to be a matchup nightmare for anyone. So to neutralize him, I look at Broderick Jones and is making his third start at right tackle, where it's like, can he continue to effectively control the line of scrimmage? Can he pull? We call him a dancing polar bear for his ability to get to the second and third levels of defenses and display the athleticism that made him a first round pick out of Georgia. He's a player that the Steelers drafted up to get. They traded with the Patriots, and the Patriots said, the enemy of my enemy is a friend, and we're going to prevent the Jets from taking him at 15. The Steelers get him at 14. And okay, you're talking about a hypothetical, but if Broderick Jones is the Jets starting left tackle, is Aaron Rodgers hurt? You know, like, we could play this what if scenario, but how Broderick Jones plays in his third start is going to be huge. Can you continue to establish the running game back-to-back weeks where you've had season highs, coming off a game where you had 205 yards rushing? If you can establish that again, maybe you can get Kenny Pickett going in the passing game, because Kenny Pickett needs to get better. George Pickens has been pouting a little bit too. He wants to get the ball. I understand it. At the same time, if a defense is going to say, hey, we're going to put a safety over the top, who else does that open up? Can Deontay Johnson win one-on-one matchups with his route running ability? Getting Pat Freiermuth is going to be back big at the tight end position because, okay, Kenny Pickett, you've been struggling to throw the ball effectively. There's your security blanket. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's funny. We could record this 5 weeks from now, and I'd probably be saying a lot of the same things about the Steelers offense, but you want to start to see some improvement. You've seen it with some of the running game. It needs to get better with Pickett. Steelers have been 2-0 since Jones has taken over at right tackle, 2-0 with Matt Canada from the booth now on the sidelines to getting more of that feedback and that interaction with players on the sidelines. You hope that that gets better because, again, if the offense continues to struggle this year, his contract's up at the end of the year, he's going to be your, okay, who's our scapegoat? He's going to be the guy Steelers point to come season's end.
I want to play really quickly before we get to keys and predictions. I want to play a quick word association game with you with two players for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm really fascinated in this. Just tell me really quickly, first thing that pops into your head when you think about this, these two players. So the first one is Jaylen Warren.
Lightning.
Lightning. Najee Harris.
Thunder.
Okay. All right. I'm interested. I'm very interested to see how they are perceived in Pittsburgh, because Jaylen Warren, he's the guy that scares me way more than Najee Harris does.
Yeah, and rightfully so. He's made the more of his opportunities. I don't look at it as like an antagonistic thing with the Steelers two running backs, but here's how I look at it from a front office standpoint. Najee Harris now, it's several years in. They drafted him because it came down from Art Rooney, the owner, saying we're not going to finish dead last in the league in rushing ever again. Najee Harris has been a good leader for this team. I like Najee. He's good with media members and all of that. He just doesn't seem to have a second gear. It's like when a car's stuck in first gear and it's like, okay, you want to accelerate. And between the tackles, he's good. You're going to need him. He's a different style of runner than Jaylen Warren. But Jaylen Warren runs so hard, and I don't think it's a mistake that they're listed as co-starters now. I look at it from the standpoint of, okay, beyond next season, are you going to pick up Najee's fifth year option because he was a first round pick? And right now, I'd probably say no. I just don't think he's worth that money. I just don't, given what the production you can get from a running back, and a running back like Jaylen Warren, who is an undrafted player. So you're going to need them both though, too, because it's going to be tougher and tougher to tackle Najee Harris in the fourth quarter of games when it's cold out November, December, January. But Jaylen Warren, he's made the most of his opportunities, and statistically, it just looks a lot better. It looks better on tape, too. Najee Harris has been better, but if he's your first-round pick, let's be honest, is he going to be worth that big second contract at a running back position where typically you're not going to pay a premium unless you're getting it like a Christian McCaffrey-type player?
All right, let's get into keys. You were getting into it a little bit before. You wanted to save it for right now, so I'm going to give it to you. What's your biggest key to this game this weekend?
It's the edge rush. The edge rush versus the Browns offensive tackle. We'll see about DeJuan Jones if he can go at right tackle. But that, to me, is if the Steelers are going to win the game, it'll be a lot like that Monday night game where we saw, where it's like, there's your advantage, where you generate 14 defensive points. I don't expect that level of production because I think the Browns will make adjustments to that from what we saw from that Monday night game earlier this year. But that to me is the biggest thing where it's like, that is where your advantage lies in this game, because we know what to expect from TJ Watt, and Highsmith, who got a big contract extension on the eve of the season, is proving his worth too. So that to me is going to be the biggest thing. And I mean, they're cliches, but they're all very important. The turnover takeaway situation, because that's how the Steelers have achieved success. And then which team can run the ball better and win time of possession. So it's like those three things: off the edge, what that matchup does, turnover battle, and then controlling the clock and controlling the line of scrimmage and the time of possession.
I'm going to give you my key, and it feels like a little bit of a cop out, but it's real here for us. It's the key to me is Deshaun Watson. If Deshaun Watson comes out again, not 14 for 14, not perfect, not, you know, if he comes out and just plays well, just plays a good football game, beginning to end, a good football game, limits his own mistakes, and is opportunistic with both his arm and his legs, because that was such a big reason for the win against Baltimore, was when he got rolling with his legs, it was awesome to watch. It's what we wanted to see. Stay clean. Don't take big hits. Make smart plays. Don't turn the ball over. I think if Deshaun Watson plays a good football game, the Cleveland Browns have a massive advantage there. And so that to me is the key. I know it feels like a cop out to say the quarterback.
No, not at all.
But not when it has been such a question, if he's right, if Baltimore got him right and he's right, that to me is the biggest key. And I would feel much more comfortable going into this game if I know he's right. So
yeah, and that's what the Browns, that's why they brought him in. That's what you thought you'd be getting on a consistent basis. And
yep,
we finally saw it for a half, and it's like, can he sustain that? That's going to be the big question.
That's it. All right, Mark, I'm going to let you get out of here, but I'm not going to let you get out of here without a prediction. So give me your score prediction. Browns Steelers in Cleveland this Sunday, 1 p.m. Both teams 6-3. Who do you got coming away with a win in this one?
Well, I don't think this is exactly going to be a shootout with the over-under at 37. And your listeners and viewers will love this. I've got the Steelers winning 23-20. I think it's going to be tight. Man, I'll say this too. If Nick Chubb hadn't gotten hurt in that first game too, I don't mean to rub salt in the wound, but I think you're talking about a different outcome in all seriousness. I just think the Steelers find a way. I don't know why. It is just a gut feel. I've got Pittsburgh winning, and this will probably be my last time on your program because of that.
No prediction. Way. Like, no, Mark, first of all, this has been great. I'll give you a little bit of flowers here in a minute, but you got to stop bringing up the Nick Chubb thing, because there's a rage in Cleveland about that hit and about Pittsburgh and Nick Chubb. There's a rage. We got to stop talking about that. My prediction, you probably won't love this one so much, but my prediction is Browns 31, Steelers 13. I think the Browns statement win this thing. Hang on though.
Back-to-back statement wins. Mike, explain this to me.
Well, the statement win against the Ravens was the beginning for me. It was the beginning. It was like the knock on the door, and the Steelers game is the kick the door in. It's the Heisenberg. If you watch Breaking Bad, it's the, I am the one who knocks. That's what this is. This game for me. And again, this is a true prediction. I'm not trying to be a smart ass. This is what I will put down on in writing. Although I will say I called the last second field goal against the Ravens. That was my prediction, and they nailed that one. I think the Browns run away with this one. I think the defense is too good. And I think the offense, if the offense would have looked like what I think they're going to look like Sunday in the first game, they would have won that game. I think they're going to play a little bit of a cleaner football game. I don't think the Steelers are scoring two defensive touchdowns in this game. Yeah. And I think because of that, I think the Browns have this weird thing that they do where even when they don't feel like they're playing great offensively, they wind up with 30 points. Like, it's just a wild situation that they have. And then all of a sudden Kareem Hunt's like stumbling around for two touchdowns. And you're like, how did that even happen? I believe the Browns run away with this one by multiple scores. So again, I'm not trying to, that's not homerism. That is what I really feel like is going to happen in this game. And I think the Browns are really good in their building, and I think they're going to continue to be really good in their building. So that's my prediction for this one. Hey, Mark Bergen, You can come back on this show. It's not going to happen again until next year. But when we do this show next year, you can certainly come back on because you were a phenomenal guest. I hate the fact that I keep having these guests on from these rival teams. Last week, Kevin Ostreicher with the Ravens, he's been on with me twice now, and people like him and people enjoy him, and it sucks. And I have a feeling, even though we want to talk shit about the Steelers, I have a feeling a lot of people here are going to like Mark Bergen, and they should, because Mark, you brought up a lot of great points. You were super educated on everything. I appreciate your knowledge of both the Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. And I don't know that I could have had a better guy on here to talk Brown Steelers with. So I really appreciate it. Make sure you check out Mark on the Believe in Steelers podcast with Ike Taylor, former Steelers player, and check out his coverage of the Steelers. If you want to know how he's feeling about this game as the week goes on, make sure you follow him online at @MarkBergen_Mark. Thank you so much for coming into the doghouse tonight.
Mike, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it and all the kind words. And I just hope your listeners and viewers have some mercy in all seriousness. But it was a pleasure, and we'll see what happens Sunday, because this AFC North, like, we're a problem for each other, but we're a problem for the rest of the league as well. I think there's a lot of mutual respect among the teams in the division, and you can see why. But thank you again for having me tonight. I really appreciate it, Mike.
All right, Mark. Have a good one. See you later. And maybe we'll talk a little smack during the game, okay?
Love it. Take care now.
See you later. Mark Bergen, again, go check him out at @MarkBergen_ on Twitter. A good dude. Really appreciated it. And it was nice to have a Pittsburgh guy come on and kind of know what he was talking about. That was great. So, Mark was great. Please make sure to go follow him. Give him a little bit of love. Very respectful. I love that about this. I want to talk a little bit of smack, but it's hard. It's hard when you like the guy. The Browns and the Steelers coming up on Sunday, 1:00. You go take a break for like 55 minutes, because I'm going to be right back on Garage Beers tonight. We got a fun guest. I don't know if you've seen this guy on TikTok, but his name's Chef Zay, and he does like commentary for the Browns games, and he's wild. And he might be the most passionate guy I've ever seen about the Cleveland Browns. He's going to come on and talk Browns with us. We're going to talk about his videos. We're going to talk about his content. And we're going to talk about the Cleveland Browns. And so much more. So we got that going on Garage Beers tonight, 9 p.m. I will be back with Chad, Joey, and our special guest, Chef Zay, to talk Browns, Cavs, Blue Jackets, and everything else. Make sure you grab a beer and come back and hang out with us then. For the rest of the week, OBR Weekly Wednesday with Barry and Fred. All Eyes on Cleveland Thursday with Brad Ward. And it all leads up to Sunday, 1:00, Browns, Steelers. And we've got the game day rewind that'll happen at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday night. So be a part of that and be a part of the OBR. Make sure you're subscribed to the OBR. Make sure you are tuned in to Twitch and YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to all the socials and following everywhere there, and get to the OBR.com. Check out the merchandise and make sure you're following and reading along there. That's going to do it for the Doghouse. Again, big thank you to Mark Bergen for coming on from the Believe in Steelers podcast. And that's going to do it for Ian back behind the scenes, getting us on the air. I am Michael Keefe. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next week, go Browns.
Chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.